Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the Matrix.
And certainly you have entered into this place called Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us and each week making the show as exciting as it is. We have plenty of people downloading our podcast, somewhere up around 600 to 900 every time we do a show. We'd like to build that up to about 15,000, Jerry, but we'll get there sooner or later. Jerry Gordon, my sidekick, is here. And we're going to have Ken Timmerman on. We've had him on several other times. And what are we going to be talking about today?
We're going to talk about the reality behind Trump's withdrawal order, which seems to be not what it's all cracked up to be by the media in the United States.
It's the truth.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Right. And look, when I knew right off the bat, as soon as the media and some of the leftists began to cry, you know, the sky is falling, I figured at that point, okay, this is not what they say it's going to be. And we're going to find out in this discussion with Ken Timmerman, because of his connections with Mr. Bolton, that this is a very well-calculated thing that the president's going to do, correct?
It is, and not only that, but Ken also has some historic connections with some senior Israeli security analysts who previously were part of its military intelligence, as well as senior IDF positions. So he knows essentially how the Israelis think about these issues and what they can do essentially to deal with these new problems.
And a potential silver lining in the whole deal with Trump making sort of the art of the deal with Turkey and the Russians. When you find out, when you listen to the show today, you're going to step back and go, wow, that was a brilliant strategy by the United States president. And for obviously the people in Israel know that you rest well, because the president of the United States is one of the best ardent supporters that any this country has ever had since the beginning of our country. So don't go away. Stick around. We want to have you come right back into our next segment with Ken Timmerman. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio, sponsored officially by Torah Learning Channel. That is TorahLearningChannel.com. You can see it on the internet or on YouTube, and you can watch it any day of the week, any time of the night. The best Torah teacher available around in English. So don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
G'day, I'm Jonathan Van Dorn.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind,
every Thursday.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And we are back for this first segment on Beyond the Matrix. Wanted to remind you that we are sponsored by the Torah Learning Channel, found at TorahLearningChannel.com, 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, the best Torah teachers that we can find. And they have all volunteered. Over 100 rabbis and rabbinical organizations are contributing on a daily basis of having teaching just available to you. And it is found, like I said, streaming at TorahLearningChannel.com. Jerry, we have our very distinguished guest that we enjoy having, Mr. Ken Timmerman. Ken, thank you so much for taking time to join us on the show. We have a lot of questions. And mainly the one that we want to kick off is this whole pulling the troops out sort of thing that took place, and everybody went into panic, and the critics of President Trump began to criticize. But it seems that there's been a shift. Lindsey Graham comes out after this weekend's White House luncheon, and there seems to be a concept of a slow down and serious withdrawal idea. Can you address that for a minute?
Yeah, and let me just start off by saying that this is what President Trump said he was going to do. Don't let people forget that. He's right. Not a neocon. He doesn't believe in nation building. He wasn't elected to send troops around the world to build nations in Syria, Afghanistan, or places like that. And he said from the beginning, we're going to reduce our presence overseas where we can. He said, even in NATO. So this is not new. This is not unexpected. He's, again, delivering on a campaign promise. And by the way, I would add to that, before we get to Senator Graham, I would add to that, who invited us into Syria? What congressional authorization is there for us to be in Syria? The government of Syria has repeatedly said they don't want us.
Correct.
We are not invited. We're not allowed on their territory. We're violating international norms and international law. And Obama just decided that we're going to go there because we supported the Muslim Brotherhood, and we wanted to send troops over there and send weapons over there first from Benghazi and later directly from the United States. So President Trump transformed that mission into let's defeat ISIS and the Muslim Brotherhood, not support them, as Obama was doing. And that's what he did. They no longer have a caliphate. They no longer have any significant territory in Syria or Iraq. Zero. That's a huge accomplishment, mission accomplished there, and it's time to pull the troops out. And Trump, by the way, one more thing. Trump said to his military commanders in January of this year, give me a deadline.
Right.
Give me a date for pulling the troops out. And they hemmed and they hawed and they said, oh, Mr. President, you know, Mattis said, well, you know, we need them here. We need to keep them there. We need to keep them everywhere. And Trump finally said, no, we don't. That's not why I ran for president. That's not why I was elected president, to keep us in what George Washington called these overseas adventures,
right?
Entanglements. So Trump did what he said he was going to do, and now we're seeing a slight modification of the tactical implementation of his plan.
Very, very good. Very well explained. Jerry, you wanted to ask a question about the Turkey and the Islamic question as well, right?
Well, yeah, but I also want to get the tail end of what really occurred this past weekend. Why is it that Senator Lindsey from the great state of South Carolina was given a photo op and a microphone Sunday to say that he doesn't think Mr. Trump is going to peremptorily take our troops out of Syria? What do you think went on there?
Well, they had a very good luncheon. And Trump had, the president had just come back with the first lady from a surprise Christmas visit to Iraq, where he spent time with the troops, where he heard from battlefield commanders. And I can guarantee you he heard from them as well the importance of gathering battlefield intelligence. And, you know, he learned things on the ground that Mattis, as Secretary of Defense, was not telling him. He was not hearing through the normal channels. It was very important for the president to get on the ground. Lindsey Graham went there to the White House, got this firsthand from the president on Sunday, and they had a back and forth exchange. My understanding is it lasts for nearly 2 hours. That's a long lunch at the White House.
Wow. So let's turn the story around to that infamous character in Ankara, whose name is Erdogan. Trump gets him on a phone call, and he says, okay, I'll tell you what, Mr. President Erdogan, why don't you take on the responsibility for, quote, wiping out the terrorists, which, of course, in Erdogan's frame of mind means the PYD-YPG Kurds, because he thinks they're aligned with PKK or whatever the initial stands for, and the remaining ISIS fighters in eastern Syria. And do you think this was a trap the president laid for Mr. Erdogan?
Art of the deal.
Actually, I do think it was a trap, and I think Erdogan fell right into it. He was trying to squeeze the president into breaking our alliance with the YPG, the Kurdish fighters that you mentioned, who are, in fact, they are attuned with the PKK. They're not part of the PKK, but they are attuned with them. They all believe in a greater Kurdish nation and democratic elections. And they've had representative government, by the way, in northern Syria since 2012 with the YPG and their political arm, the PYD, there, and Assyrian Christians, by the way, who are there on the ground with them as part of their government. So this is a pluralistic democratically elected representative government in northern Syria is something that is so rare in the Middle East, so rare in the Middle East. And Erdogan wanted to smash it under the pretext of hitting terrorists. And here's where the President Trump, I think, really swung him around, trapped him in his own dialectic. He said, look, okay, you want to go after the terrorists? Fine. Be my guest. You take care of ISIS. We're out of there. We're not going to help you any longer. It's your job now. We smash them in their territorial caliphate. You say they're still there? Go ahead. Go at it. And be my guest.
What do you think? What do you think that Erdogan was thinking when our commander in chief decided to allow U.S. commanders to retain their weapons that were supplied to the Kurdish YPG?
Right, and that's an important part of this because. Right. People think that Trump is a big dummy. They say, oh my gosh, all the geniuses in Washington were against this. Notice this was the same geniuses who said, oh, we have to get rid of the Shah of Iran because he's a human rights violator.
Oh, yeah.
They're the same geniuses who say we should, by the way, get rid of our alliance with Saudi Arabia because their crown prince is a human rights violator. And we should jettison, tens of billions of dollars of arms sales and the importance of having a Saudi ally against the Muslim Brotherhood, whereas a couple of years ago they were with the Muslim Brotherhood. They have turned around thanks to this so-called human rights violator. These geniuses in Washington, the foreign policy so-called experts, have been all over the airwaves. You heard them saying that Trump is a dummy, and Trump has just run circles around Erdogan, and I think he's run circles around those so-called experts as well.
Well, once again, it looks like that Trump has successfully played such a under the radar role that they cannot predict what he's going to do. And I really do think it's this whole idea, the art of the deal. He knows how he gathers the intelligence and knows what to do to make things to accomplish things. I think it's an amazing deal that's happened right now.
It is. And look, he's going to keep troops in Iraq. He made that very explicit. He was very careful to make that explicit. And those troops in Iraq are only 20 miles, perhaps, away from the troops in Syria currently. Right. So we're not talking about a gigantic deployment. It's not like going from Pensacola down to Miami.
Right.
Okay. It's maybe like going from Teterboro into New York City.
Right. Ken, I was Jerry and I were talking about right before the show how there is no other nation with the mobile strategy that the United States has and can move massive amounts of troops all around the world in a matter of 48 to 50 hours. And we need to put that in the back of our mind that there is not another nation that can challenge us significantly without us coming in and responding very strongly. And we don't need to have to be in every country, have a presence in every country.
That's absolutely right. And our drones are in Iraq. They remain in Iraq. They remain on our aircraft carriers. We have a capability. Look, the important thing, let's make this very clear, is making sure that the Iranians cannot not establish, because they've established the land bridge from Iran into northern Lebanon,
right,
but that they cannot benefit from it. And that we remain in masters of that airspace. We may remain masters of that land corridor, so we do not allow the Iranians to have a free flow of weapons and of men into northern Lebanon. By the way, they want to move, and this is the former IDF chairman, the guy who's just retiring now, who said a couple of days ago, the Iranians want to establish a force of 100,000 men in Syria. We're not going to stop that with 2,000 guys on the ground.
No, absolutely.
We're
going to
stop that with massive bombardments and intelligence and the kinds of things that we will still be able to do from Iraq and from elsewhere, and that I believe this president will do, because his goal is to thwart Iran in its expansionist efforts across the Middle East. He said that, and he said, I will continue to do that, and he told that to Lindsey Graham.
Yes, I only have about 1 minute left before I have to go to the break. So why don't we hold off? The next question. Do you have another question you wanted to ask before the break, Jerry, or you want to go into the break?
Why did the PYD YPG opt to take protection from Assad, of all people, who's an enemy of the U.S. at this point, Ken?
And we only have probably less than 45 seconds.
All right, look, the Kurds are in it for the Kurds. They wanted to be our allies. We have been their allies, but the Kurds are in it for the Kurds. They always get screwed, pardon my French, but they always get screwed by all of their friends and all of their allies. They need to protect their people. What was the best option? Go to Damascus. Let the Syrians stand between them and the Turkish army. By the way, brilliant strategy.
Absolutely.
Get your enemy to defend you from your worst enemy.
Correct.
No, I tell you, it was brilliant. And look, we have to go to break, so don't go away. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this message.
Everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Thank you for sticking around. We're in segment two of Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Rod Bryant, along with Jerry Gordon and our illustrious guest, Mr. Ken Timmerman. We're talking about the troop withdrawal, the potential slow troop withdrawal, talking about Turkey and all the things that is concerning Syria and the Kurds. Jerry, I'm going to knock it over to you so that you can take off with your next question.
Ken, the Israelis are concerned about the so-called withdrawal from Syria, which is not really a withdrawal, as you've been discussing it with us. But there's an undercurrent of concern about that from Israeli security experts like General Yossi Kupervaser and Morty Kadar. But among those concerns are the loss of U.S. bases in South Syria at Al-Tanf and in Deir ez-Zor, enabling completion of Iran's land bridge. And that, they feel, would threaten Israel's Golan and Lebanese frontiers and enable infiltration of the West Bank. What are your views?
Well, first, I know Yossi very well. We go back a long ways, and I have a great deal of respect for him. He was a great member of government when he worked with, in this the security ministry, and he was a very insightful military intelligence analyst official. Head of military intelligence analysis at the IDF. Look, the Israelis have had it as good as it gets for the past couple of years with President Trump. It doesn't get much better than this. They've had U.S. troops and intelligence on the ground feeding them stuff. They've had the U.S. actually doing the liaison work on the ground with the Kurds, so Israel didn't have to expend its precious resources to do so. We were doing a lot of their work for them and doing it happily, and doing it happily. The relationship between President Trump and Bibi Netanyahu is probably better and closer than any relationship between any U.S. president and any Israeli prime minister in the history of modern Israel. So what Yossi is talking about, General Kupervaser is talking about, is really analytically, you look at the repercussions of U.S. withdrawal from Syria. Yes, it could open the way to Iran. Yes, it could embolden the Syrian government and help them to get a greater grip on more territory. Yes, it might embolden the Russians, but, and then there's all the buts, but the Russians are all of a sudden going to have to be a little bit more responsible. Now, they are on the front lines fighting with ISIS. Turkey is going to have to be more responsible. They are on the front lines fighting against ISIS, whereas we had been beforehand. So it's really they are looking at the potential downsides. They're aware of them. They're analyzing the situation. They're right to do so. But Israel is really in the catbird seat right now. The Israeli Defense Force, the Air Force in particular, controls the skies. And as long as they can convince the Russians to cooperate with them when they launch airstrikes against the Iranians, Israel's going to be just fine.
Ken, given that analysis, I noted that former IDF senior commander, Major General Gershon HaCohen, suggested that Trump's Syria withdrawal could be a silver lining for Israel. And what he was referring to was U.S. recognition of the Golan sovereignty, no pressure for West Bank withdrawals, and recognition that the UNIFIL in Lebanon is a complete failure, and we, meaning the United States, is supplying weapons to the Lebanese forces. And that didn't stop Hezbollah from building cross-border attack tunnels. How realistic is Hacohen's views?
I think it's actually quite realistic if the Israelis press the administration, the U.S. administration, on those things. I think, by the way, those are quite achievable goals. They're rational goals. They're reasonable goals. Of course, U.S. aid to the Lebanese army has been an abysmal failure. I've been friends with President Aoun of Lebanon for many, many years until he formed this alliance with Hezbollah. I tried to get him away from it 10 years ago when he was first getting into it in 2008, and he steadfastly refused. He's committing suicide. Lebanon is committing suicide by this government alliance with Hezbollah. They are turning themselves into a Hezbollah state. And of course, Israel should suggest nicely, quietly, back channel to the United States that we should cut off military aid to Lebanon. They should also suggest those other things. And by the way, they have a president now in America, in the United States of America, who's the most pro-Israel president we have ever had. And why wouldn't we be in favor of cutting off aid to the Palestinians? We've done that already, to recognizing Israel's sovereignty in the Golan Heights and to recognizing Israel's right to maintain a presence, a people presence, right? Not an occupation, but a people presence, which goes back thousands of years in what's called the West Bank, Judea and Samaria.
Right. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Ken, your mutual friend, National Security Advisor Ambassador John Bolton, is about to hop on a plane this coming week to go to Israel first, I gather, to meet Bibi, who's just come back from a love fest with a new president in Brazil, of all places, and then move on to a meeting ultimately in Ankara on the 7th. What do you think that agenda is all about?
Well, I think this is going to be locking in the gains of the withdrawal from Syria. First of all, the gains for Israel. The United States will back Israel in its military efforts to check Iran in Syria. Second, I think Bolton is going to say to Erdogan, please have at it against ISIS. That's why we're pulling out. We expect you to have at it at ISIS. But, oh, by the way, there's a red line to going after the Kurds in northern Syria. They are not Turks. They are not you may think of them as your enemy, but you have no justification or rationale for going after them. And we will not support you in doing so. I think he's going to lay down the law with Erdogan and make clear what the U.S. red lines are in those discussions.
Interesting. Getting back to Russia. Russia is about to deliver some S-300 systems. But given the experience of Syria's use of the so-called older S-200 systems against these massive series of attacks that Israel's Air Force has done in Lebanon, destroying those Fajr 5 precision rocket factories and other stuff, what do you think Russia gains in this withdrawal, if anything?
You mean in the U.S. withdrawal, right?
Yes, right.
Well, I don't think Russia gains much. They gain a lot of added responsibility to what they'd been shirking before. Now, they are the only major international player besides Iran on the scene. I don't think you can call 200 French and British troops a major international presence. The Russians have thousands of people there, not just combatants, but they have, you know, hundreds of planes, and they have air bases. They have a naval presence and everything else. So now it's really time for the Russians to step up to the plate. If you're serious about fighting terrorism, fighting ISIS, and by the way, during the campaign in 2016, Donald Trump, as a candidate, said, why can't we be friends with Russia to fight terrorism together? And that's what we are seeing here on the ground. People then screamed about Russia collusion. By the way, a little word on Russia collusion. If nobody else has read Jerry Corsi's very, very good book, Killing the Deep State, they should read Chapter 8 on the real Russia collusion. I just reread it last night, where he talks about John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, who was the official lobbyist for Sberbank, the biggest bank in Russia that was representing the Russian state. This was in 2013 to 2016. John Podesta was representing the Russian government in the United States as a lobbyist. So and Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, was overseeing transfer of military technology, which has since allowed the Russians to develop a hypersonic ballistic missile, which they tested just last week. Thank you, Ms. Hillary, for your real collusion with the Russians.
That hypersonic missile you're talking about also upends the U.S. mutual, the so-called MAD strategy, doesn't it, Ken?
Well, and it in particular, it upends the INF Treaty,
right,
which the Soviet Union signed up to in 1987. They agreed to destroy their SS-20 missiles. They didn't. The U.S. got rid of cruise missiles, nuclear-tipped cruise missiles, and Pershing missiles in Europe to keep that class of weapons out of European territory. The Russians have violated it. This is just the latest example. It's not the only one, Jerry. It's just the latest example. The Russians are in total violation of that treaty and, by the way, of the START-2 treaty. The new START treaty. I'm sorry, the new START treaty that was signed under Obama.
Also, we have about a minute left. Right before we go, I just wanted to add something. I find it interesting that Moscow delivers the S-300 air defense system. And one of the things that I wanted to say when Jerry was asking, what do they benefit by the U.S. withdrawal? I'm thinking they also have an opportunity to find out how the Israelis can avert the S-300 air defense system in the process, because they really have not had a chance to test this out in a real war environment, have they?
A very, very good point that you make there. And by the way, there was a very well-known Russian military analyst who was doing a kind of review of the achievements of 2018. And one of the achievements for the Russian military of 2018 was that they had reached 95% combat tested for not their equipment, which they had already, but for their senior commanders. 95% of their senior military commanders now had combat experience, something that you can't gain in war college.
No, absolutely not. And it's interesting because we know that Israeli pilots and U.S. pilots have been another country, I won't say where, actually training against the S-300 and how to get around the system. So a very interesting defense knowledge comes from just having war. And after 17 years of war in the United States, we're very formidable as a country. We have to go to a break, Mr. Kimmerman. We'll be right back after these messages, guys. Don't go away. And remember that we're sponsored by the Torah Learning Channel. You can find us at TorahLearningChannel.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are having a very interesting conversation about the Middle East, and my voice is wearing out, so I'm going to just knock this over to Jerry. Jerry, go ahead and take it off. We have Ken Timmerman with us here on Israel News Talk Radio's Beyond the Matrix. Go ahead, Jerry.
Ken, you have focused in your most recent book, ISIS Begins, on the perilous condition of those ancestral Christians on the plains of Nineveh. What is their status now? given the so-called end of the war with ISIS in northwestern Iraq. Have they returned? Who is facilitating their return? And quite frankly, with 5,200 troops there, is that the one of the reasons why President Trump wants them to stay?
Well, first question last. It should be one of the reasons. Unfortunately, it is not. I just got back from a fact-finding mission to Mosul and the Nineveh Plains, which is the area around Mosul to the north and to the east and to the south of Mosul, where the Christians have lived since the first century A.D. Okay, they were proselytized by the Apostle Thomas in, you know, basically 80 to 100 A.D. The Christians were massively driven out, just as the Yazidis were. They were persecuted. Some were crucified. The women were taken into slavery. The girls were turned into sex slaves, and they were completely traumatized. I mean, I've met people with stories I wouldn't even really want to share with you over air, the kinds of things that ISIS did to people who remained behind in after 2014 when they took over the Nineveh Plain. But they are slowly coming back. The big impediment to them coming back right now is actually the Iranians, the Shabak militia. These are the Iraqi Shiite militias, part of what's called the Popular Mobilization Forces, these, you know, local committees, local militias. And they are starting to occupy Christian towns. I've written about this, a number of stories recently, notably at the New York Post recently. You can find that at my website, kentimmerman.com, and other places, Front Page Mag as well. The Shabak are flying the same black flag of Islam that ISIS was flying when they were occupying it. And this has just completely traumatized people. And they say, wow, we see those black flags. We're not coming back. Many have, nevertheless. But it's a big, big deterrent to see the Shiite militias there as well.
Isn't this why you had promoted the idea of U.S. protection of this minority in the plains of Nineveh?
Absolutely. And I think that this is a something that the U.S. could do easily, is something that the people on the ground want us to do, to provide security so Christians and Yazidis can return to their homeland so they feel security. They will not be persecuted by ISIS. They will not be persecuted by Shiite Muslims. They will be allowed to ring their church bells at Christmas and on Sunday mornings and not have to listen to the muezzin call to prayer at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, I sat down with the leader of the biggest Shiite militia there, a guy named Wael al-Qadha, and in Bartella in northern Iraq. And he went on for hours telling me how much he wanted to, you know, accommodate Christians. He wanted to live side by side with the Christians. Whenever they had a problem, he would try to, you know, resolve it peacefully. And he said, you know, they came to me and they didn't like to hear the loudspeakers on our mosque. So we took the loudspeakers away. We did that right away. I said, okay, well, that sounds really great. I went then to the local priest, had dinner with him that night. He said, yeah, they took the loudspeakers from the mosque and they just took them to their military camp where they wake me up every morning at 5 o'clock. So, you know, it's a complicated situation. Yeah. And the Shabak were brought in, ironically, into Bartella by David Petraeus in 2003, right after he had been the U.S. military commander who had swept from the north into Mosul and taken over and occupied that area. And he brought some 2,000 Shiite Shabak families into this Christian town, Bartella, and settled them out from Mosul. And they have been a problem ever since.
Now, Ken, I wanted to just throw something in and make sure that we address it, because we only have about 4 to 4.5 minutes left in this last segment. A lot of these Christians left the country or went to other countries having lost everything. I mean, their houses destroyed, yes, their furniture. They will return with nothing. And there are organizations in the United States and in other places that have been sort of stood up, nonprofit organizations that are helping them to repatriate themselves back into the country with some financial assistance. Can you address that?
Yes, and I've got a page up on my website Under ISIS Begins, when you look at my books, there's a page, What You Can Do. It lists some of these, but let me just speak about it on air. The Assyrian Aid Society is an amazing group. They're helping with schools, school books. They're helping with refugee housing. Samaritan's Purse is another U.S. organization. They built clinics and do other things on the ground. Now, one of their clinics was occupied by the Shias and taken over just last year, and they couldn't do anything about it because there were no U.S. troops to help them. Another group which I've worked with personally is Christian Solidarity International. And again, they provide aid on the ground, and they work with probably the most amazing group of people in Iraq I've ever met, the Hammurabi Human Rights Organization, HHRO .org. They are amazing, run by William Warda and other people on the ground who I've been dealing with for the past decade. And they have, they're bringing aid to people on the ground and working also for reconciliation, which I think is very important because, you know, the Christians live with Muslim neighbors and they will have to continue to live with Muslim neighbors. And to do so, they have to promote. We have to help them to promote reconciliation between the two communities.
How optimistic are you that this can happen?
Well, I see a lot of goodwill on the ground on both sides. I told you about this really amazing interview I had with the head of the Shabak militia while he was talking out of both sides of his mouth. One side of his mouth was full of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And that in itself, I thought, was pretty intriguing and something new because 6 months ago, a year ago, they made no effort. To reconcile with the Christians. They just wanted to dominate. So I think things are slowly turning around. When I was in Karakosh recently, which is the largest Christian town in the Nineveh Plain, it was 60,000 people before the ISIS occupation. They've gotten up to roughly 30,000, so roughly half the people have returned now.
Wow.
You can walk down this the streets of the city at night, and even though some of the houses are still collapsed, they were bombed out and dead, the bodies of dead ISIS fighters have rotted inside beneath the concrete. You could still walk down the streets. The lights are on. The shops are open. People are at outdoor cafes. The liquor stores, very important. Liquor stores are open. The restaurants are open. And people are walking without guns. They're walking the streets normally as normal people in their hometowns. It reminded me of certain West Bank communities that I've visited, which are remarkably safe, remarkably secure. You can let your teenagers out there and walk in the evening, something you wouldn't do in Bethesda, Maryland.
Ken, you're referencing the West Bank. You're really talking about Judea and Samaria, aren't you?
Of course.
Interesting. Ken, what is it the U.S. could really provide to these returning Christian communities in the way of training to defend themselves?
Well, to help the Nineveh Plains Protection Units, it's the local police, to help them expand. It's in the works, but they need more help. By the way, I really got to give credit to Vice President Pence. He turned around U.S. policy a year ago in October of 2017 when he said, we are going to redirect U.S. aid money from the United Nations and other international groups that traditionally favor Muslims, and they do. I've seen it on the ground myself, to the Christian and Yazidi communities on the ground, the victims of the ISIS genocide. And I've seen that happening. I saw that happening. I met with the USAID officials in Iraq. I met with the recipients of those aid programs. This is actually happening. U.S. taxpayer money is finally getting into those communities thanks to this administration. It's never happened before.
That's really comforting to know. Go ahead, Jerry.
Ken, what is the relationship between these Christian groups and the Kurds, who at one time had been involved with freeing the area?
Well, this is a problematic situation that most people don't know a lot about. We think in the United States the Kurds are our friends, and strategically they are our friends. They want to be our allies. But they have had a historic rivalry with the Assyrian Christians in northern Iraq for hundreds of years. The Kurds took part in the genocide of the Christians in 1915 to 1919 with the Turks. The Kurds were on the side of the Turks in massacring Christians. They have since the Barzani family, and let's be clear, the KRG, the Kurdish regional government in northern Iraq, is really should be called Barzanistan, because it's dominated by the Barzani family and run like a mafia crime family. The Barzanis have been seizing land from Christians. They've been prohibiting Christians from coming to work in crossing lines. They've closed roads up until just recently. And again, the U.S. government has weighed in very heavily and gotten them to open some of those long closed roads. I met a doctor in a town called Telescof, who had a clinic just north of Mosul. It was only about a 15-minute drive away. For 5 years, he could not go to his clinic because the Kurds, not ISIS, the Kurds had closed the road. Why? Because they wanted to dominate those areas to provide, quote, security for them so they could sell the oil. And by the way, a lot of this is all about the oil. And the Kurds have made amazing deals for oil in the Nineveh Plains with a Norwegian company run by an Iranian-American named Mosavar Rahimi and Zalmay Khalilzad, who is now the U.S. envoy for peace in Afghanistan. But for 10 years, we're working in oil in Kurdistan.
Ken, we are completely out of time. What an amazing education that you have given us in the show today. Look forward to having you come back on a regular basis. Of course, you always will. We want you, hope you have a wonderful, happy new year and a safe one, as a matter of fact. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix, and Jerry and I and Ken will say shalom for now. We'll chat with you guys next week at the same time.
Thanks so much. God bless and all best for 2019.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.